Septuagesima is a pre-Lenten period comprising the three Sundays leading up to the first Sunday of Lent. Lent is called Quadragesima, meaning 40th. So the three Sundays leading up to the first Sunday of Lent are called, respectively, Septuagesima, meaning 70th, which is today, Sexagesima, meaning 60th, which is next Sunday, and Quinquagesima, meaning 50th, which is the following Sunday. The epistle from the first letter of St. Paul to the Corinthians, chapter 9, verses 24 through 27, and chapter 10, verses 1 through 5. Brethren, know you not that they that run in the race all run indeed, but one receiveth the prize? So run that you may obtain. And everyone that striveth for the mastery refraineth himself from all things, and they indeed that they may receive a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible one. I therefore so run, not as at an uncertainty, I so fight, not as one beating the air, but I chastise my body and bring it into subjection, lest perhaps when I have preached to others, I myself should become a castaway. For I would not have you ignorant, brethren, that our fathers were all under the cloud, and all passed through the sea, and all in Moses were baptized, in the cloud and in the sea, and did all eat the same spiritual food, and all drank the same spiritual drink, and they drank of the spiritual rock that followed them, and the rock was Christ. But with most of them, God was not well pleased. Haydock Commentary. Nothing is more famous in the annals of history than the public games in Greece. It is to these the apostle is here alluding. He brings the examples of runners and wrestlers for a prize in the Grecian games, where only one could gain the prize. It is true in our case many obtain the crown for which we strive, but everyone is in danger of losing it, and so must use all his endeavors to obtain it. He says that athletes curb their inclinations and abstain from debauchery, or anything that may weaken them or hinder them from gaining the corruptible crown. So how much more ought we to practice self-denials for an eternal crown? St. Paul shows the necessity of self-denial and mortification to subdue the flesh and its inordinate desires. Not even the labors of an apostle are exemptions from voluntary mortification and penance. When he says that our fathers were all under the cloud, etc., he means when God conducted the camp of the Israelites in the daytime by a cloud and in the nighttime by a pillar of fire. Under the conduct of Moses, they received baptism in figure by passing under the cloud and through the sea, and they partook of the body and blood of Christ in figure by eating of the manna, called here spiritual food because it was a figure of the true bread which comes down from heaven, and drinking the water miraculously brought out of the rock, called here a spiritual rock, because it was also a figure of Christ. But with most of them God was not well pleased. Of 600,000, only Joshua and Caleb entered the land of promise. The rest were destroyed and perished in the wilderness. Their punishment ought to be an admonition to all to avoid such sins of idolatry, fornication, murmuring, etc. The Gospel from Matthew chapter 20, verses 1 through 16. At that time, Jesus spoke to his disciples this parable. The kingdom of heaven is like to a householder who went out early in the morning to hire laborers into his vineyard. And having agreed with the laborers for a penny a day, he sent them into his vineyard. And going out about the third hour, he saw others standing in the marketplace idle. And he said to them, "Go you also into my vineyard, and I will give you what shall be just." And they went their way. And again he went out about the sixth hour and the ninth hour, and did in like manner. But about the 11th hour he went out and found others standing, and he said to them, "Why stand you here all the day idle?" They say to him, "Because no man has hired us." He said to them, "Go you also into my vineyard." And when evening was come, the lord of the vineyard said to his steward, "Call the laborers and pay them their hire, beginning from the last even to the first." When therefore they were come that came about the 11th hour, they received every man a penny. But when the first also came, they thought that they should receive more, and they also received every man a penny. And receiving it, they murmured against the master of the house, saying, "These last have worked but 1 hour, and thou hast made them equal to us that have borne the burden of the day and the heats." But he answering said to one of them, "Friend, I do thee no wrong. Did thou not agree with me for a penny? Take what is thine and go thy way. I will also give to this last even as to thee. Or is it not lawful for me to do what I will? Is thy eye evil because I am good? So shall the last be first, and the first last. For many are called, but few are chosen." Haydock Commentary. The conduct of God in the choice he makes of members for his spiritual kingdom, the church, and of his elect for the kingdom of heaven, is not unlike that of the father of a family who hires workmen to labor in his vineyard. There are various opinions respecting who are meant by the first and by the last in this parable. Many of the fathers suppose that the saints of different states and degrees are here designed, whose reward will suffer no diminution from the circumstance of their having come to the service of Christ at a late age of the world, so say Saints Hilary, Gregory, and Theophylact. Or, according to Saints Basil, Jerome, and Fulgentius, those who come at a late age of life. In the latter case, however, we must understand that their greater fervor in cooperating with divine grace in the latter part of their life has supplied and compensated for the defect of their preceding negligence. Hence it may sometimes happen that the reward of such as enter late in life on the service of God will exceed that of the less fervent who have entered at an earlier period. But as Christ rather seems to speak here of his militant church on earth than his triumphant church in heaven, many commentators explain the parable of the Jews and Gentiles. For the Jews, after bearing the yoke of the Mosaic law for so many ages, receive nothing more than what was promised to the observance of that law, whilst Christians receive a more plentiful reward for their more easy labor under the sweet yoke of the gospel. It is in this sense that Christ says to the Jews in Luke 13:29, "Publicans and harlots shall go before you into the kingdom of heaven." Hence the Jews may be supposed to murmur that they who are first in their vocation to be the people of God and first in the observance of his law should not be preferred to others who in these respects have been far posterior to them. By the vineyard, says St. John Chrysostom, we here understand the commandments of God. The time for labor is the present life. In the first, third, sixth, ninth, and 11th hours, that is, in infancy, youth, manhood, declining years, and extreme decrepitude of age, many individuals, yielding to the effective call of God, labor in the exact performance of the divine commandments. The Jews divided their nights into four watches, each watch comprehending 3 hours. So they divided their days into four greater hours, from sunrise to sunset, and each of these great hours contained 3 lesser hours, so that the whole day from sunrise to sunset consisted of 12 hours, as also did the night. The first of the great hours, comprehending the 3 first lesser hours, contained half of the space betwixt the rising of the sun and midday, and the end of this time was called the 3rd hour. The next great hour was from that time till midday, called the 6th hour. The following great hour contained half of the time betwixt noon and the setting of the sun, the end of which was called the 9th hour. The 4th great hour comprehended the last 3 lesser hours remaining till sunset, so that at the end of the 11th hour mentioned here, began the last lesser hour of the 12 hours of the day, of which our Savior said in John 11:9, "Are there not 12 hours in the day?" As to the moral sense of the parable, by the day is commonly expounded all the time from the creation to the end of the world, and so the 3rd hour is reckoned from Adam to Noah, the 6th from Noah to Abraham, the 9th from Abraham to Moses, and from the 9th to the 11th was from Moses till Christ's coming. And the time from Christ to the end of the world is the 12th hour. God is master and disposer of all, who, by his grace, calls some sooner, some later. The marketplace in which men are so often found idle as to the great concern of their eternal salvation is the world. The design of this parable was to show that the Gentiles, though called later than the Jews, should be made partakers of the promises made to the Jews. This is also the meaning of verse 16, where it is said, "The last shall be first, and the first last." When it is said, "I will give you what shall be just," the prospect of a reward is therefore a good motive, authorized here by Christ himself. We are not to infer that in the kingdom of heaven, where all shall receive their just reward, there is envy, discontent, or any complaint. Christ wishes to convey to our minds an idea of the immense honors that will be heaped upon all such as return with sincerity, though it be even at the decline of life. So exceeding great will be their reward that it would excite envy were it possible even in the elect. Some are called to the service of their God and to a life of virtue from their infancy, whilst others, by a powerful call from above, are converted late in life, that the former may have no occasion to glory in themselves, or to despise those who even in the 11th hour enter upon the path of rectitude, and that all might learn that there is time sufficient, however short, to repair by their diligence and fervor their past losses. Jesus Christ does not count so much the number of years as the fervor and diligence we employ in his service. Calvin is rather unhappy in his choice of this parable to prove his favorite tenet, that salvation is not the reward of good works, but of faith alone or predestination, since Jesus Christ represents heaven as given wholly as a just reward of meritorious labor in the vineyard, and God gives to all at least their due. A truly humble Christian will be ever satisfied with his lot without envying that of others. As St. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 15:41, "Star differs from star in glory," so there will be different degrees of glory in heaven. Many are called, but few are chosen. Only such as have not despised their caller, but followed and believed him, for men disbelieve only of their own free will. Hence the rejection of the Jews and of negligent Christians, and the conversion of strangers who come and take their place by a conversion both of faith and morals. On the part of God, all are called. See Matthew 11:28. In effect, many after their call have attained to faith and justification, But few in comparison are elected to eternal glory, because the far greater part do not obey the call, but refuse to come, whilst many of those who come fall away again. And thus very few, in comparison with those that perish, will at the last day be selected for eternal glory.